हरि ओम ओम यं ब्रह्मा विष्णु वरुणेन्द्र रुद्रमरुतस्तुन्वन्ति दिप्तैस्तवैर्वेदैः सङ्गोपक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगा ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तं न विदुःसुरासुरगणा वेदाय तस्मै नमो नमः. Salutations to that Supreme Being who is one without a second, whom the sages call by various names. Our salutations to him, whose glory has been sung through the rational hymns of the scriptures of the world, but whose limitless and infinite glory none can comprehend. But again, whom the sages and devotees realize within their hearts in their deepest contemplation. Him we salute again and again. May he shine in our hearts, manifest there in all his glory, and dispel all darkness and ignorance. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace. The subject this morning, silence. It seems rather strange that I have to speak for almost an hour on silence. I wish I could demonstrate the power of silence. I have seen it demonstrated from day to day in the presence of my master. He would be seated in a silence. There will be a crowd of spiritual aspirants seated by him. And they would all remain in silence. And each one's consciousness would be lifted up. Also, I have seen how there will be people coming with their individual problems. No questions should be asked. The problems should not be placed before the master. But as each one would go out of the room, suddenly he would find his problem solved. And there is another instance of Holy Mother. She went to southern India and was visiting the ashrama in Bangalore. Thousands of people gathered on the lawn. And Holy Mother was out at the period. Then she came back and she saw these thousands of people waiting for her. She stood there for a minute. Then she spoke in a language, said, "I wish I could speak your language." And then from the crowd, somebody said, "No, Mother, you don't have to speak. Please stand there and let us look at your holy feet. And it is said that a wave of bliss, as it stood in silence, a wave of bliss passed through the whole crowd. And this I am reporting from one who was present amidst that crowd. Before we understand what exactly silence means, I must try to explain to you what exactly is meant by religion. As I have many times, and I have never tired of repeating this one truth, that religion is experience. It's not a belief. It is not an acceptance of any creed or dogma. It is not an acceptance of the authority of any scriptures, whether they be of the Vedas or of the Bible, but it's a matter of experience. A Hindu, a man of spiritual aspirant, a man who is a spiritual aspirant in India, does not ask you, what is your belief? He'd ask you, what is your experience? Now, again, what? Experience of what? We are experiencing this universe. And then also, as we gather knowledge, we experience things. Ideas and thoughts come to us. But what is this experience that religion claims? It is the experience of the ultimate reality. Call that Godhead, or whatever name you may call. But what is the nature of that reality? Just consider, whatever we experience in this universe and in our consciousness, it's all fleeting, changing. But reality is that which is unchangeable, which is beyond time and space, and which is beyond all relativity. And so, the only way that this reality or God can be described, if at all any possibility of description, is the eternal, amongst the non-eternals of life. It's the highest abiding joy in the midst of the fleeting pleasures of life. But even then, it does not convey any idea, any inkling of that idea into our consciousness until we see and experience for ourselves. There is a story in the Upanishads we read that the father sent his son to study under a holy man to know something about God. And this young boy came back after study, after many years. And the boy asked, and the father asked him, "Son, tell me, what have you learned of God?" And he gave a wonderful lecture, quoting the authorities of the scriptures, describing what God is and what God is not. Then the father sent him back saying, "Son, you have not yet learned what should be learned. Go back." Then he went back again and studied under the teacher for some more years. Then he came back. And this time also, the father asked him the same question, "Son, tell me what you have learned of God." But this time, he remained silent. He couldn't speak a word. Then the father looked at him and said, "Son, your face shines like a knower of God. You have known him. His name is Silence." Then again you find those who have attained to that silence and reached that ultimate reality, we find them again speaking about God. Otherwise, how should anybody know? They give us some ideas, some thoughts of him. As it were, they give us a thread to hold on so that we can proceed into that depth of silence. And so here we find an illustration to explain why these Godmen again speak. Sri Ramakrishna gave this illustration. The bee, before it sits on the honey, it makes a big noise. Then as it sits on the flower and begins to suck the honey, it remains silent. Then again, drinking deep of that honey and becoming intoxicated, the bee makes a sweet humming noise. Similarly, before one realizes God, before one knows God, or before one tries to go into silence, to feel that presence, he speaks abundantly of God. Sometimes he says God is dead, and sometimes he says, "Now God is this and not that." And so they create confusion in the minds of the people. Instead of giving any understanding of God, they confuse people's minds. They write books and pamphlets to prove their idea of God is the best and the most wonderful truth, and the other ideas of God given by others are myths. No, they talk nonsense like that. Then when they go into silence and they attain that supreme reality, which is only attained when one goes into complete silence, then as he comes out of that, drinking deep of that, becoming God intoxicated, they speak of God. And sometimes they say, "He is this way," and again, "He is that way." They do not limit him. They do not try to define definitely that God is this and God is not that. And then also they point out, it's beyond all conceptions, beyond all thoughts, beyond all expressions. Know him and realize him. If you go to study, the lives of the great seers and saints and teachers of the world, you will find, for instance, the great sage of the Upanishads declares firmly, I have known that truth which is beyond all darkness. Then he says, you also, knowing that truth, attain to that immortal bliss. Swami Vivekananda one time said, if anybody says, I have realized that, but you cannot, believe him not. Whoever has attained that truth knows this also, that there is the possibility in every individual to realize that truth. Then you see in the life of Buddha, he says, I live in the world of Brahman. When you come to Jesus, he spoke with authority, not like the scribes and Pharisees. And what was that authority? Because he knew God. He became one with God. And so, he spoke with authority. This again reminds me of my master. Sometimes, you know, when you ask him something, he'd say, oh, I'm not feeling just right today. A little headache. Come tomorrow. You come again. Not today. My stomach is not just right. Then you go. Then he says something. He gives the answer. And you know why he would delay? Is a direct conversation with God and then give you that answer. Whatever he spoke, whatever he said, that's what his brother disciples said about him, that it came directly from God. One time, I had mentioned that in one of my books. He asked me to look at the almanac for a date when he'd leave Madras. So I got the almanac, but I just couldn't resist my laughter. He said, why are you laughing? I said, oh Maharaj, you'll look at the date and fix that, but I know you are not going on that date. Then he said, do you think I do anything by my own will? And I said, what do you mean? For everything you do, you have the direct vision and conversation with God, and he tells you what to do. And he said, yes. For everything, yes. That you accepted as your disciples, did God tell you to do that? Yes. He spoke with authority, not like the scribes and Pharisees. And it is not only these great ones, the divine incarnations or their associates, but saints in every age, in every country, you find who have seen God, who have known God, who have experienced God. Take for instance what Meister Eckhart claimed. He said, the word of God can be heard in the soul, the light of God can shine in the soul and transform the soul into God. Now the next question is, Where is God? Where can we find Him? Remember that Saint Paul said, we live, move, and have our being in God. It's not far away. To quote the Upanishad, as one not knowing that a golden treasure lies buried beneath his feet, may walk over it again and again, yet never find it. So all beings live every moment in the city of Brahman, yet never find him because of the veil of illusion by which he is concealed. You see, this human body is considered as the city of Brahman. In other words, God is dwelling within each one of us. That one being, that one reality, is the soul of your soul. And He dwells as the greatest and as well as the minutest. He covers this whole universe. And again, He is dwelling infinitely in the minutest atom. From Brahma down to the blade of grass, there is that infinite presence. And that's where God is, within yourself. My master many times pointed out this truth, pointing to his heart, he says, when you find God, if you find God here, you will find Him everywhere. If you do not find Him here, you will find Him nowhere. In the Gospel, according to St. John, we read, the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Where is that light? That presence everywhere, in every one of us. We live, move, and have our being in God every moment of our life. As Vivekananda said, you are never apart from God any moment of your life. And you have seen nothing but God all your life. Only you are not conscious of it. Only you are not aware of it. And because we do not comprehend because of the darkness covering it. To quote the Gita again, the Atman is the light is covered by darkness. This darkness is delusion. That is why we dream. Now, of course, before I go into this, again a question may arise. But why should we have to see God? We're all right. Eat, drink, and be merry. What is wrong with that? Nothing. So why do we have to see God? Why is there to be any religion at all? Yes, the answer is, in fact, we are all struggling to find God. Only some struggle ignorantly and others struggle knowingly. What is it? We are all seeking life, not the life that passes by, but life that is immortal. None of us believe that we shall die, though we see people dying every moment. That's the greatest wonder, and that's the greatest truth. But we are seeking that life in the senses, in the body. And so we meet with death. He who loves this life shall lose it. So we are struggling to attain that life immortal, but in a wrong way, ignorantly. And so we remain subject to birth and death. But we are seeking immortal life. And that is God. We are seeking God ignorantly. When you seek for pleasure, aren't you seeking for pleasures that would be lasting forever? You are asking for a good time, and you believe that this good time, when it comes, or when you are enjoying, you think this would last forever. So unconsciously you are seeking that highest abiding joy, the eternal happiness, only in a wrong way, ignorantly. Same way with knowledge. None of us can remain satisfied with finite knowledge of the finite. You know, I often tell this story. There was a professor who used to walk on the beach every day in the afternoon and sit there by the beach. And he would find every day a strange sight. He'd see a young boy, a lad, with a little vessel trying to lade out the water of the ocean. He watched him for some days and says, "Come here, boy. What are you doing?" "Oh, I wish to lade out the whole water of the ocean." "Ah, what a child you are. How can you do that?" "But sir, aren't you also a child like that? You are trying to gain that infinite knowledge by knowing the finite." And so it is that we are seeking that infinite knowledge. But where is it? In the infinite. Seek God. Know the self. There's this truth brought out in the Upanishads. A disciple comes to the teacher and he says, "Holy sir, tell me, what is that truth, knowing which I know everything? Just as by knowing a piece of gold, we know everything that is made of gold. Just as by knowing clay, we know everything that is made of clay. Similarly, tell me, what is that, knowing which we know everything?" And the answer was, "Atmanam eva vijanita." Know thyself and give up all vain talks. So it is that we are seeking that self-knowledge. We are seeking the knowledge of God. We are seeking that happiness in God. We are seeking that fulfillment in God, but ignorantly. And the fulfillment comes when we find Him. When we realize our true being. And as Sri Ramakrishna used to say, that why is it that we do not find God? Of course, ignorance. But what is this ignorance? As we are not interested in knowing the Creator, we are so interested in His creation. We are seeing the magic and absorbed in that magic. We don't see the magician. And another, a Christian mystic, St. John of the Cross, pointed out the same thing. The more the soul leads to created things, relying on its own strength, by habit and inclination, the less it is the cause for this union, because it does not completely resign itself into the hands of God that He may perform it supernaturally. And of course, does that mean that we just give up, renounce everything, nothing to do with this world? No, it is not that. This world has no reality. This world is a dream, an illusion, like zeros added to one another, ends in zero. But plus one and then add zeros, it adds in value. Similarly, this whole universe, this world, our whole life will have meaning if we make our life centered in that one, and that is God. Then you find meaning to life. Now the point is, what is the way to uncover that light? In the Gita we read, when the mind is under perfect control and freed from desires, so that he becomes absorbed in the Atman and nothing else. In this connection also, let me quote to you the great Christian mystic, Meister Eckhart. There must be perfect stillness in the soul before God can whisper His word into it. Before the light of God can shine in the soul and transform the soul into God. When the passions are stilled and worldly desires silenced, then the word of God can be heard in the soul. So the plain truth is, we have to learn to go into silence. And which means that all the waves of thought, waves of the mind, have to be stilled. I gave this illustration, I only told you the other day, that the sun is reflecting on the lake, on the bosom of the lake, but the water of the lake is dirty and also lashed into ripples and waves, and so the sun, the reflection is not perfect. But there is the reflection. Same way, there is the reflection of that sun, of that pure consciousness in our mind, body. That's why there is consciousness in the mind and body. But the reflection is not perfect. With the help of that reflection, we are going out. And waves of thoughts and ripples, restlessness of the mind, all these happen. Now, if we can make the mind calm, if we overhaul the mind, as it were, clear up all the dirt and mud lying underneath, then that truth of God, that is God, the indwelling God, that hidden Christ, becomes revealed to us. And this going into silence, Swami Vivekananda explained by a beautiful illustration. He said, suppose a carriage is drawn down the hill by four powerful horses, and you are the rider in that carriage. It's so easy to go down the hill. But suppose you restrain the horses, hold back, and with such strength that the horses want to gallop, and there is the rolling hill down, but the carriage is standing still, consider that as silence. Consider that as meditation. You see. In other words, it's the highest form of activity. The horses, the senses are like horses, want to drag you. And this world is so slippery, going down. And you are holding the rein. And your mind is absorbed in God. No other thought there. That is silence. And what is the way the great ones have attained that? Tells us to practice concentration upon one ideal. We call this ishtam, your chosen ideal. Chosen ideal of God. You know, they get some ideas about concentration and meditation. So you just think of this something there, you know, look at that light or look at that candle. Oh no. Nothing but concentrating upon God, your chosen ideal, no matter how you think of God. And as I said, God is silence, indefinable. And yet again, he expresses himself in so many ways. For instance, a Christ, a Krishna, a Ramakrishna, embodiment of God. And or a Brahman becomes Brahman, is one with Brahman. And he is the mirror upon which your own self is reflected. You have to choose an ideal, no matter what conception of God you have. It's no difference. But concentrate upon God, upon that as God. Here, one very interesting truth. One time, a young woman came to Sri Ramakrishna and said, "Sir, you have asked me to concentrate, to meditate upon God in this particular way, but I can't. Why can't you do that? The moment I try to think of God and the moment I try to calm down my mind, my nephew comes to my mind. I love him very much." Then Sri Ramakrishna says, "All right. Concentrate upon your nephew as God." Shall I tell you another interesting story? It comes to me just now. You know, there was a disciple who was asked to meditate, but he came and complained to his master that he can't meditate because he has a buffalo and he is so fond of that buffalo that that buffalo comes to his mind. And so this teacher said, "All right, you go to your room, shut yourself in your room and meditate on this buffalo." And so he did for some time, and then the teacher comes and knocks at the door, and he opens the door, and he wanted him to come out, and he came out and says, "Go back and meditate some more." Then again the teacher comes and knocks at the door is open. Then when the teacher says, "Come out, how can I, these horns are there." Then the teacher said, "Now you have succeeded in meditation. Now meditate upon God." Now again, you see, when Arjuna, for instance, was taught this truth, to control his passions and to give his whole mind to God, he says, "You are asking something impossible. not merely closing your eyes and trying to think of God, but try to feel the presence of God all the time. While you are walking, while you are sitting, while you are working, let every work be, every action be worship of God. In other words, keep a part of your mind in God attached all the time. Now, of course, you couldn't do it all the time, but do it as often as you can, and then you will see, you will fall in love with God. And that's what is important, what is needed. You have to fall in love. Then you don't have to be told to think of God. You will love to think of God. And all the time, back of your head, you have the presence of God. And when you reach that state, what we call dhruva smriti, constant recollectedness, then from that arises prajna, illumined knowledge of God. Om Hari Om. Om Asato Ma Satgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrittorma Amritam Gamaya Abir Abir Maiti Rudrayate Dakshinam Mukham Tenamang Pahi Nityam. Om. Lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from death to immortality. Lead us from darkness to light. Light us through and through, and guide us evermore with thy loving presence. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace.